across Western New York at 100.9, 103.7, 104.3, 104.9, and 105.5. This is WCJW, Warsaw, Batavia, Arcade, Avon, and Geneseo. Today's favorites and the legends. Western New York's CJ Country.
It's another CJ Country Saturday, and time to update the news for producers and farmers of CJ Country. Let's get the show on the road with Andrew McCray and Farming the Countryside.
This edition of Farming the Countryside is brought to you by ProFarmer. ProFarmer provides key information to help farmers make profitable decisions. Go to ProFarmer.com. Welcome to Farming the Countryside. I'm Andrew McCray. 60 years ago this fall, the Future Farmers of America merged with a group called the New Farmers of America. The story of both groups and their eventual coming together is an interesting look back at farming and the educational system at the time. It's an important history that should not be forgotten. It's our topic for this week's Farming the Countryside, brought to you by ProFarmer. Start making confident marketing decisions with ProFarmer. ProFarmer's condensed style is designed to save you time while giving you the important information you need when making those important marketing decisions. And you'll stay on top of profit opportunities with ProFarmer's mobile sell alerts and easy-to-use mobile app. To learn more, just go to ProFarmer.com. If you were ever a member of the FFA, you probably had to memorize a fact from 1965. That year, the New Farmers of America merged with the Future Farmers of America. As you'll hear in a moment, using the term merge is probably not accurate. Antoine Alston is my guest this week. He is the Associate Dean of Academic Programs in Agriculture and Environmental Studies at North Carolina A&T University. He is also the keeper of much of the history of the New Farmers of America, a group formed for black students studying agriculture, mostly in the segregated schools of the South. I thought it was fitting to take a look back at this important group 60 years after their leaders met with FFA leaders at their national convention in Kansas City. It's an important story with ramifications yet today. Some people listening to this won't realize that besides FFA, there was once a group called NFA. And maybe you just want to start with what was NFA?
Yes. The New Farmers of America was the organization for African-American farm boys, or as they said at that time, Negro farm boys. It started in 1935, had its national convention at Tuskegee, but the roots of it actually started in 1927 at Virginia State College, which is now Virginia State University. And just like the roots of FFA came out of Virginia, so did the NFA's roots. And really it was because there was a need to have an organization for Negro farm boys to teach them leadership and also advanced agricultural skills that they could take back to the farm and actually utilize. And for the first couple of years of the NFA, from 1927 to 1935, state associations popped up, you know, and pretty much all your southern states where you had 1890 land grant, which is your historical black land grant colleges, and they went all the way as far north, believe it or not, as New Jersey even had a state association one time. But the state associations met individually, and then it was voted upon that in 1935 there would be a meeting in August at Tuskegee University to establish a national organization. And this was at the encouragement of Dr. H.O. Sargent, you know, who was at that time in the U.S. Office of Education, and he was over what we call special populations, which was at that time African Americans, Native Americans, Hispanic or Mexicans, as they said at that time, and African American was Negro at that time, but what have you. And at that time, instead of saying Native American, they said Indian populations. He was over all special groups at that time, so he encouraged the head teacher trainers for Negro agriculture education to form this group because it was really thought it would be highly favorable to, and that's the words they used, it was highly favorable and time that they would bring this organization together. So it lasted from 1935 through 1965.
But now, even before there was a national FFA, there were state NFA groups,
yes,
right?
Yes, there were state associations, like the first one being the New Farmers of Virginia, and when they were headquartered at Virginia State. And then, of course, we had New Farmers of North Carolina, and pretty much every state's 1890 land grant, in particular the teacher ed training program for agriculture, served as the state headquarters for those respective organizations.
Did those state associations, where did we have, for instance, the Cotton Bowl logo and Booker T. Washington instead of George Washington, did that came out of the state associations, or did the national put that together?
Well, actually, at a meeting, and actually it took place in the early 1930s, there was a meeting held down in Owensburg, South Carolina, at South Carolina State University. And the whole purpose of this meeting was to come up with the Constitution, come up with some of the things as far as forming a national organization. And so S.B. Simmons, who was head of Negro Teacher Education for Agriculture in North Carolina and over Agriculture Education for the black schools in North Carolina, he was charged with pulling together, getting the emblems together, getting the framework for Constitution, a lot of these things. He didn't write the whole Constitution, but getting all the framework together. So really it started at that meeting down in Orangeburg, South Carolina in the early 1930s. And then a few years later, and the national first convention took place at Tuskegee Institute, as it was called at the time, now Tuskegee University.
Sure. What were some of the differences then as far as the organizations themselves, as far as maybe some of those symbols and emblems or other things that people might not know?
Well, one of the things you just said, where the FFA's emblems across, and I'm a lifetime FFA member. I came through FFA. My father was an NFA member. Our colors in FFA, of course, are national blue and corn gold. The NFA's emblems was a black and old gold. Okay. Their emblem, still having a cross section with corn cob, was the Cotton Bowl. They still had the owl sitting on top of the plow, the rising sun in the background, but instead of referring to George Washington, they had Booker T. Washington, because you had to understand the significance of Booker T. in the African-American community and what have you. Some of the contests were similar, but some of them were different. Like, we had the quartet, the spiritual contest, and where they sung Negro spirituals, for example. So, you know, there were a few things. You know, we still had some, like, farm electrification, dairy judging. We had a lot of similar contests, but then some of, like I said, some of these things were different as well. One of the things I would tell you as far as leadership of the NFA, which was kind of interesting, is that even though S.B. Simmons was considered the secretary, executive treasurer for the NFA, they are the head of the FFA and also had to serve simultaneously over the NFA as well. Unfortunately, that, you know, because it was thought that, I guess, if you will, that we could not manage ourselves, if you will, unfortunately. And keep in mind, you're talking about individuals who have master's degrees and doctorate degrees and were college professors, okay? So just to give you the context of what we had to work with.
Give an idea, as we go from 35 to 65, and of course at 65 they're getting close to merging, but how much interaction was there between the two organizations? Or we know, did their officers ever get together, national officers? Was it completely separate? Or?
Well, as I said before, it was separate, but definitely not equal. There really not much interaction between the groups. You know, in some states you would have the FFA head of that organization, not so much the student, but maybe like the executive person might have some interaction with the NFA person. One of the things I would tell you is that when they first started, the NFA operated autonomously outside the U.S. Office of Education. But later on, a few years down the road, it started in the 40s. The NFA, at a meeting in Tallahassee, Florida, at the national convention that was held down in Tallahassee at Florida A&M, the NFA leadership was told that the U.S. Office of Education would not continue to provide any money at all to the national NFA if they did not come under the umbrella, just like the FFA was. And so basically they're saying, we're going to withhold your money. We're not going to do any travel reimbursements. We're going to hold your allowance, if you will, if you do not come under the auspices of our organization. And so therefore, they really lost a lot of the control they had. And it stayed that way for the next 25 years, really until I don't like to say the merge. I like to call the absorption of the NFA, because see, when you merge, you still maintain some semblance of your organization.
You mentioned something that I've heard several times, you know, merger versus really it was more of a takeover absorption. What is it about 1965? Because you had 50,000 members in 65 in NFA, and we've never come back to that. What was the difference or what? Because it wasn't truly a merger.
It wasn't a merger. You know, when President Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act, one of the things that mandated was that all public school entities, including their student organizations, had to merge. So NFA, FFA, New Homemakers of America, which was for black females, Future Homemakers of America, Black 4-H, White 4-H. I mean, everything had to come together. One of the things that I'm going to tell you happened then that have, and then what you don't see now, back then you had African American leadership in place. You had more African American schools. You know, you had neighborhood schools, community schools. And like many places in the South, I just gave you my own home county, Nash County, where we had a few black high schools and a few white high schools. Those merged into one high school. You know, so a lot of those teacher positions, as those guys retired, were not replaced.
Yep.
And what have you. So we lost a lot of African American leadership. There, in turn, you lost a lot of those mentors that would encourage folks, you put young African American males to go into agricultural education and into the field of ag. So you saw a steep decline in African American. You know, a lot of people say, yeah, you know, you have a lot of decline in African American farms. You did. But really and truly, you have people, you don't necessarily have to be from a farm to be in agriculture. And not everybody who necessarily was an NFA, I mean, yeah, a lot of them were farm boys, but not everybody was, you know. So it was really, back then, you have a loss, you had leadership, and then you have a loss. Just to give you an example, in North Carolina, the first 5 years of the merger of the black and white ag teacher associations, it was mandated a black teacher had to be president 1 year, white teacher next. They rotated this for almost the first 5 years or so of those organizations, you know, while they merged. So really, it was by law that merger took place. I talk about how the merger, or what I like to call the absorption of the organizations, and really a lot of this, if you go back to Brown versus Board of Education, really started this. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I would tell you, in Title IV of the Civil Rights Act is what really mandated this signing. But one of the things I wanted to talk to you or mention to you was that the implications of merging is that the NFA would lose all its awards, signia, emblems, jacket, creed, flag. I mean, all of that would be lost. And that the NFA's membership would increase by 13%, while in some states, the membership would go up by 25 to 30% with this. And not only that, but here's the one thing I mentioned to you. The New Farmers of America board met with the, well, they came together July of 65 and came up with these resolutions, one being that the National FFA's Constitution and Charter be reconstituted to include both groups in the merger. Two, that the Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare be petitioned to establish a permanent civil service position within 12 months of the merger for African-American from this board, okay? Resolution 4 stated that to allow the state association treasurers for NFA to get whatever relief that they may be allowed for the local chapters to replace the NFA paraphernalia. And 4, that the U.S. Office of Civil Rights investigate the FFA a few months out just to make sure that these resolutions took place. Well, of course, you know that wasn't going to fly. So a discussion was held with the chief of the Ag Air Branch of the U.S. Office of Education with the NFA adult officers about these resolutions. And basically, they were told that this was not going to happen, pretty much. So pretty much, the merger that took place in 65, nobody really wanted it, honestly. But they said, we're going to have this. Let's have a true merger. But of course, it was not supported by the FFA at all. And one of the things I will tell you was interesting is that it should be noted in the governing committee minutes of the NFA on November 3rd, 1965, a month later, there appeared a note that efforts to obtain an appointment of a former NFA member as a regional representative of AGA who could serve as a member of the office of the FFA board of directors was not approved. So a month later, they put it in writing that this was not approved. And so you have very few African Americans that have ever served at the national level in the FFA. And I can tell you, I am one of a handful of people who holds a PhD in agriculture and extended education in the United States, African American.
Yeah.
It's really a shame.
Was the story almost the same for New Homemakers of America, too?
Oh, definitely, definitely. You know, you had the merger, you know, you lost your emblems. It was the same on both sides, even with Black 4-H, you know, versus White 4-H, you know. You don't have nearly the amount of, you know, individuals at one time that you have, you know, that you would have had in place. You know, and a lot of us got to do it. You don't have African American teachers anymore. Well, to a great extent.
Sure.
As a matter of fact, I will tell you, just to kind of give you an idea, the state of Missouri, where Lincoln University is, one of our sister 1890s, you know, they don't have a ag ed program anymore, haven't had for years, but of course they had a college of ag. But they only had one African-American teacher last year, and it was a female teacher, and that person actually is one of my graduate students right now. That's out of the whole state of Missouri, okay? So I'm telling you, this thing of diversity is something that has got to be addressed, and we talked about it, and talked about it this time that we act upon this. We as America, we call ourselves a melting pot, but we don't reflect the melting pot that we truly call ourselves in the discipline of agriculture education, and we really need to improve upon that, particularly with all the opportunities that are available in agricultural science.
Now that we're out 50 years, what do you do now to begin to get more African-American students or teachers involved in the program? Because, I mean, kids nowadays, they've heard of NFA, but it's a footnote in a history book somewhere.
Well, one of the things is it's got to be a grassroots effort. We've got to have ag teachers that really can identify young African-American, young Hispanic, young, you know, just across the board, young talent, period, that could possibly be ag teachers and encourage them to come up and go into a teacher education program in agriculture or family consumer science, you know, just come up and major in this. But it's really got to start with, it doesn't matter whether the teacher, I mean, yes, it's good you have an African-American teacher, but you've got to have a teacher that cares enough to even invest that kind of time and energy and have a foresight to see in that young person something they don't even see in themselves yet. I think that's what great teachers see, the ability you have even when you don't see it in yourself.
Talk for a moment about A&T having so much of what it has and why it does.
North Carolina A&T, as I said before, S.B. Simmons, who was the head of Negro Agriculture Education in North Carolina, our head teacher trainer here, he was the executive secretary for the FFA for most of his existence and was the one that really got the emblems together and helped organize that first national meeting at Tuskegee. Well, by him being here in North Carolina and being over everything, really we became the de facto headquarters, if you will, for the NFA during its existence. So that's really why we have a lot of what we have. But thanks to Dr. A.P. Bell, who was our longtime chair of Ag Ed from 1965 to 1994, in fact, he taught my father and taught me, we have the archives that we have now. And so that's why we have a lot of the collection. And we're actually working on trying to digitize and do a lot of these things now with the collection. But I can safely tell you, we have the largest collection of NFA in the United States. I can actually put my paycheck on that one. You know, you'll find a piece here and a piece there, but not what we have here.
Well, what happened to so many other states? Did other states' stuff wind up here, or did other states' stuff, for the most part, just get lost?
Got lost, got thrown away, you know, in dumpsters. Because keep in mind, the NFA and FFA, you know what I'm saying, when they merged, the idea was to get rid of the NFA and all semblance of the organization. So a lot of stuff was thrown away. You might find a jacket in somebody's closet, or somebody will pop it now and then talking about something they might have. We'll get a call every so often from someone. So honestly, really, a lot of that stuff has just been lost to time.
We should mention, a lot of what you have over here, though, was manufactured by FFA?
Yes, it was exact, and that's the interesting part. We had separate but equal, but yet FFA was the one that manufactured the banners, the medals for the contest, all these things. So this is interesting. You wouldn't let me go to school with you, but yet you produced all my stuff. So the Southern United States has always been interesting in how they have done things. You know, it's always been, it's interesting when I have friends come in from other, you know, from other countries, and we talk about, like, and every place has its history, but they really find it interesting that here in the U.S. that a country that's supposed to be a country of the free would even have that kind of history. Yeah. You know, it's mind-boggling.
Jackets were made at the same place, too?
Jackets made the same place, and emblems made the same place and everything, but we couldn't go to school together. You know, I put it to you this way, even when my father started teaching, you know, they would have a teacher's council, but the white teachers had to meet on one side of the hall, and black teachers had to meet on the other side of the hall. So it was just very interesting, you know, these type of things and how they come about.
I don't know if your father's mentioned much about this, but after 65 then, because these schools are forced to integrate, did those chapters, did things, I suppose it mattered on the location, did things go well when those emerged? Did some, in some places, NFA and its membership totally vanished from some of those schools?
A lot of places, it vanished totally. As a matter of fact, a gentleman, I helped him with a dissertation, I forgot the gentleman's name, but there's actually a dissertation you might want to check out of Auburn University, a gentleman did, and I forgot his name, but he basically did a study last year, and he actually interviewed down in the Georgia, Alabama area former white ag teachers during that time and black teachers during that time. I asked them, well, how was the merger? You know, how was it as a black ag teacher teaching white students and vice versa? How did you view the students? And in some cases, they were like, well, a student was just a student to me. Others said it was kind of an interest and it was a transition. But after a while, everybody just, in some cases, we blended together. But you know, you got to remember, a lot of these folks were in the same community anyway. They already knew each other. It was just coming together. What you find after a while is that prejudice is an attitude that is taught. You're not born with that. So somebody has to teach you those attitudes. You know, kids are not born with that. Kids just want to be loved, you know. But these attitudes that we get, that's a taught behavior.
Other things that I wouldn't know to ask that I should ask are things that you just think are interesting for people to know.
Well, I would just say, just looking at the history of how the organization was forced to merge, you know, looking at, it would be interesting to look at, you know, one of the things that was interesting about the first national convention, well, FFA too, but particularly NFA, all the organization for these national group meetings was done by mail. Hardly no phone calls. They did everything by traditional snail mail, as we would call it now. Can you imagine putting together a national convention of individuals with nothing but snail mail? You know, but everything just kind of worked out. You know, and there's been a lot of leaders that have come out of that NFA. I mean, I wish I could really tell you the number of ag professionals. I can even tell you this was interesting. Our former provost here at North Carolina A&T, he was our interim provost, Dr. Winslow Alexander. He was an engineer by degree, but did not know until I was going through some archives. His introduction, he would tell you this, his introduction to A&T as a student was through the NFA. NFA was really what was responsible for introducing a lot of young men, even if they didn't come to agriculture. A lot of them went on trips to their state's 1809 land grant, and it was because of that trip a lot of students were introduced to college for the first time.
Yeah.
So I will tell you, the NFA was really responsible for a lot of young African-American males getting exposed to college. It was getting a high advanced degree, even advanced practices on the farm.
You mentioned that about travel and so forth. Were officers, members, were they traveling near as much probably as their FFA counterparts? I mean, we think of national FFA officers traveling all over.
Oh, definitely not. I mean, they travel, but the travel budgets were definitely not in place. You had to keep in mind, this, of course, in some cases, it was kind of dangerous in some places, too. You know, this was the southern, you know, United States, you know, and unfortunately some mentalities took place during that time. So no, you wouldn't have, and of course you see FFA officers now going on, you know, go to Japan and going different places. The FFA you see now, even, I don't even think the FFA back then would have managed what FFA looks like now, you know.
But even back then, some national officers would travel to other state conventions, but in NFA probably wasn't happening?
Not as much. I mean, you would have some of the national officers that would go, but not as much mobility as you see right now.
How big would those national conventions be for NFA? Do you have any idea?
I would have to go back and look at my research. It was a couple of hundred you would see there. Not like the couple of thousand you see now, because you got to keep in mind, the national organization at its height had 50,000 members. So its convention, you know, wouldn't have been as big, but you definitely had a couple hundred. And then, of course, also some of the national meetings, the last couple of ones took place down in Atlanta, Georgia, Municipal Auditorium and what have you near. And a lot of them, I don't know if you're familiar with Morehouse College, which is Martin Luther King's alma mater, you know. So a lot of meetings took place down there at the national level.
Yep. Well, and I've even heard at those conventions in Atlanta, it took a little work they would have to call ahead as far as getting arrangements for where some of the members would sleep, because it was segregated as far as hotels or different things, places to.
Oh, well, that's just like if you look at some, you know, if you look at, I give you a prime example related to that. If you study the history of Ernie Davis, who was the first African-American to get the Heisman Trophy, he played at Syracuse. When they came down south to play Texas in the Cotton Bowl, he had to stay in a separate hotel from his counterparts. But yeah, here's this man was the Heisman Trophy winner, you know. So I'm just telling you how ridiculous this thing was, you know. It's just amazing. One of the things, if you look back at the emblems of the NFA, I thought it was interesting to show you how times have changed. One of the what we call NFA chapter officers that could be added, which was one called the Watchman, and the emblem was a straight stick of native wood. Huh. I guess that was to keep the meeting, you know what I guess. The historian was going to scrapbook the parliamentarian, but what I found was the chaplain and the song leader. And their emblems were a Bible and a baton. And I thought that was kind of interesting because, you know, you got to remember, agriculture in its roots are in rural America, which is really Christian-based. You know, if you really look at the history of the country, and really, you know, nowadays, you wouldn't, you know, with the separation of churches, we even with separation of churches stayed in, but really, back then, it was understood everybody was pretty much, you know, you had the Bible in the home, you had a, it was just a lot different back then.
Yeah.
So I just found that was interesting when you look at that.
Did they have a sentinel then or not, or was the watchman the sentinel?
The watchman pretty much served in place. The constitutional officers were the president, vice president, secretary, treasurer, reporter, and advisor. And as you have pointed out when I teach about this, the one officer you don't see is the sentinel. But here again, that watchman would have been that, you know, if the chapter chose to have that in place.
As you can tell, Dr. Alston is passionate about the history of the NFA. I should mention that North Carolina A&T has an online archive of NFA history, and he has a book titled The Legacy of the New Farmers of America, which does a great job of telling more of this story. Thanks for joining me this week. Remember, you can hear more of these shows online at farmingthecountryside.com under the Listen tab, or just use your favorite podcast platform to go back and find other topics of interest as well. I appreciate you joining me. I'm Andrew McCray. I'll catch you next time on Farming the Countryside. This edition of Farming the Countryside has been brought to you by ProFarmer. ProFarmer provides key information to help farmers make profitable decisions. Go to ProFarmer.com.
Nobody gave those cows the weekend off. For them, Saturday's just another day. This morning's edition of Agriculture Today is up next after this quick break.
When it comes to taking care of your land, you need equipment built to last. That's why so many property owners across Western New York and around the United States trust Woodmax, proudly based right here in Akron, New York. For more than 15 years, Woodmax has designed and built premium tractor and skid steer attachments that turn hard jobs into manageable work. Whether it's clearing lake effect snow in the winter, mowing pastures in the summer, or tackling spring and fall cleanup with a wood chipper, Woodmax has the attachment for your property's needs. Each Woodmax product is engineered with durability in mind, backed by warranty protection, and supported locally by the Back 40 Group team, a proud veteran-founded company who recognizes and salutes the brave men and women of our armed forces. They take pride in ensuring every customer's expectations are met even long after the sale. Visit Woodmax.com or stop by 42 Jackson Street in Akron and discover why thousands of landowners nationwide rely on trust in their products to get the job done with ease.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
China's ambitious effort to modernize farming through large-scale operations running into a serious economic wall. According to analysis by retired USDA economist Fred Gehl, falling crop prices, rising land rents, and weakening profitability combining to threaten China's grain production model and raising concerns that the country could face its own farm crisis even as U.S. farmers grapple with trade headwinds. Corn, soybean, and rice prices have all dropped sharply this fall. Corn down roughly 20% from 2 years ago, and soybeans off more than 23%. And futures on the exchange point to further declines into the year's end. Downturn follows record imports of cheaper Brazilian soybeans, which have depressed domestic prices and rippled across feed and grain markets. In the meantime, China's official cost of production data already showing soybean, rapeseed, and double crop rice farms losing money last year before the latest price slide. So at the heart of the problem, scale. New type commercial farms now lease roughly half of China's cropland and face steep cash rents, typically $330 to $670 per acre, U.S. dollars, along with machinery, fuel, and labor costs that far exceed those of smallholders. Many of the operators are now unprofitable, and Beijing's silence on the issue suggests growing concern. Analysts now warning that shrinking margins could undermine national food security goals, especially as authorities continue to push for higher yields and broader adoption of smart farming technology. Well, it's time for the beef industry and the public to face facts about America's appetite for hamburgers. Steve Dittmer is Executive Vice President of the Agribusiness Freedom Foundation. He says ground beef has become the nation's most versatile and affordable cut, but that popularity now depends heavily on imported lean beef to meet demand. In the 70s, U.S. cow slaughter yielded enough lean trim to match domestic needs. Today, however, he notes Americans spend roughly $15 billion a year on ground beef, consuming about 27 pounds per person. And U.S. producers simply can't keep up. U.S. now imports about 4 billion pounds of lean beef annually, four times what it produces domestically, to mix with higher fat trimmings and maintain affordable prices for burgers and retail ground beef. He warns eliminating those imports could send prices soaring 3 to 4 times higher, pushing a $12 burger into the $50 to $60 territory and gutting demand. U.S. milk production surged over the summer, climbing 3.6% year-over-year during June through August. Milk fat output jumped 5.3%. That's according to the latest dairy market report from the National Milk Producers Federation. Cow numbers increased to 9.5 million head. Per cow output, 6,153 pounds for the period. It reflects both strong productivity and rising milk fat composition, now averaging 4.2%. It's Agriculture Today.
Hey there, fellow travelers. It's me, the Hotel Whiz. Before you go anywhere, call me day or night for hotel rates too low to publish. I'll save you up to 75% on over 500,000 hotels across the globe. You see, I've already done the research, so you don't have to spend time online trying to find the best deal. That's up to 75% off. Just call me, the Hotel Whiz. It's a free call, and you get instant access to rates too low to publish with no cancellation fees.
Make a free call now and save up to 75% off your hotel rooms the next time you're going somewhere for business or pleasure. Call the Hotel Whiz now and get instant access to rates too low to publish. 800-378-2714. 800-378-2714. 800-378-2714. Call the Hotel Whiz right now for rates too low to publish. 800-378-2714.
Moving right along with the Saturday edition of the CJ Agribusiness Report. Tom Cassidy and Tim Slezarczyk are waiting patiently to bring you this morning's edition of the Ag RadioNet Farm News. The guys will be along right after these messages.
It's not always easy being a dad.
When's the fairy princess coming?
Any minute now.
What? What do you mean she's not coming?
But it's always worth it.
It's the fairy princess!
It is I, Grooves Zinkelbell.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life.
I know it's really you, Groove. I'm just pretending for the other kids.
Take time.
The traditional light bulb, a groundbreaking invention in 1879.
Brought to you by
it's time we switched to longer-lasting Energy Star light bulbs. They're more efficient than the old bulbs. Like a text message is more efficient than a carrier pigeon. And they cut down on our energy costs. Because in our own groundbreaking age, we deserve a light bulb that saves us some cash. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at EnergySavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ag
Council. This is the Ag Radio Network Farm News. I'm Tom Cassidy with Tim Slezarczyk.
Nominations are open for the annual Pennsylvania Dairy Industry Award Program. The award recognizes dairy producers and industry professionals excelling in leadership, service, and innovation. The program includes 3 awards sponsored by Pennsylvania Dairymen's Association, Professional Dairy Managers of Pennsylvania, and the Center for Dairy Excellence. According to Emily Barge, a communications and marketing manager at the Center for Dairy Excellence, the annual Dairy Industry Awards continue to be meaningful where it can shine a light on people making a difference within the Pennsylvania dairy industry. The awards offer annually to Pennsylvania residents. Recipients will be recognized at the Pennsylvania Dairy Summit in February. nominations accepted for Pennsylvania's Distinguished Dairy Producer, recognizing individual dairy producers or farm enterprises that have demonstrated superior management capabilities within their own dairy business and provide leadership and service to the dairy industry. The Dairy Service Award recognizes individuals who've distinguished themselves in serving greater interest of Pennsylvania's dairy industry and dairy farms. And the Pennsylvania Dairy Innovator Award, recognizing an individual or business that's provided tremendous innovation to progress Pennsylvania's dairy industry toward a brighter future, either by advancing the marketplace or creating new opportunities for innovation on the farm. You can go to the centerfordairyexcellence.org website, look for the awards tab to submit your nomination. You need to be received by the 17th of November. Once again, centerfordairyexcellence.org.
Quality feed, margins,
productivity.
Even your herd knows what's important to you. All dairy farmers, our top priority at John Deere is keeping your animals healthy and productive. With our technology, you can reduce overlaps, track nutrient content of your forage, and reduce downtime. We have the solutions to help feed and care for your herd. To learn more, talk to your local John Deere dealer today.
As harvest begins, the American Seed Trade Association reminds farmers to be diligent in taking the proper precautions to ensure treated seed does not enter the domestic or export grain supply. When properly handled, seed treatments are an effective agronomic tool that provides seeds the necessary protection for a strong, healthy start. Completely remove all treated seed left in containers and equipment used to handle harvested grain and dispose of it properly. Always be careful to follow state and federal guidelines for proper handling, storage, and disposal of treated seed. For more information, visit seed-treatment-guide.com or contact your seed dealer.
This week is the National FFA Convention. This year, they're inviting FFA chapters across the nation to test their farm management skills in a new digital challenge designed to connect students with the realities of modern agriculture, called the Farmers 2050 Contest. Three National FFA Organization chapters with the highest scores, formerly known as Journey 2050, during the National FFA Global Event Contest this week, will receive $1,000 for first place, $500 for second, and $250 for third place. The Global Event gameplay will run from 10 o'clock Monday through 8 p.m. on Sunday, each chapter registering up to 50 players to compete as a team. Full contest rules and requirements can be found at the contest's homepage, farmers2050.com. According to Spencer Harris, the Senior Vice President of Global Retail Operations, Farmers 2050 is as close as you can get to the realities of owning and operating a farm in a gaming format. He says it's a great educational resource for students interested in pursuing a career in the ag industry because it simulates the decision-making process that farmers are faced with each day. During the FFA convention, Nutrient Ag Solutions team will be found at booth 630, where they'll be giving expert advice for those FFA students and advisors. But if you're not able to attend the convention, you can still go to the website farmers2050.com.
And now another episode of One Soil to Live.
I just can't let you keep treating it like dirt, Claude.
Well, you know I don't mean to, Samantha. It's just
It's just what? You don't know it's alive?
Well,
it is alive. And if you want to get the most out of it, you'll follow these four principles to keep it healthy and functioning.
All right, Samantha. I'm listening.
First, keep it covered and keep living roots in it throughout the year with diverse plants and rotations. And finally, disturb it as little as possible.
And if I do as you say, Samantha?
If you do, Claude, I have a feeling it'll be the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
There's an amazing amount of life in healthy soil. More importantly, that life can help make our nation's farms more productive, profitable, and resilient. Contact your local USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service office today and learn more about the basics and benefits of soil health. This message brought to you by USDA and this radio station.
Why do you listen?
I typically listen here at work from my desk on my way to work in the morning. When we wake up, it goes on the radio.
I can hear a song and be instantly transported back to a time in my life that I enjoy remembering.
I think that's what I like listening to radio for, is just to stay informed on whether it's news, sports, new music, anything.
Why do you listen? Go to whyilisten.com, tell us why you listen, and you have a chance to win $500. Visit whyilisten.com today.
It pays to plan your ag taxes throughout the year to pay less at the end of the year. Call the AgTech specialists at Farm Credit East. Made in agriculture.
This is the Ag Radio Network Farm News, a voice for farmers of the Northeast.
Hey everybody, Rachel Ray here. Nothing puts a bigger smile on my face than cooking up a big meal for family and friends. But there's not enough room at my table for the 17 million kids in America who are struggling with hunger. These children, that's one out of every five, often have to skip meals because there's just nothing to eat in the kitchen. Yet there's more than enough healthy, nutritious food produced right here in America to feed every last hungry child. If only there was a way to get it to them. That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks collects surplus food to give hope to hungry kids and their families all across our country. But they can't do it without your help. Join me in supporting Feeding America at your local food bank and at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
You don't usually get a stock tip from a 16-year-old, but I'm here to tell you about a different kind of stock. It's called Better Futures, a stock for social change that's not about making money. Instead, you invest to help students like me go to college, which ends up making the future better for all of us. My name is Alicia, and I'm your dividend.
Invest in better futures with UNCF. Visit uncf.org/invest. A mind is a terrible thing to waste, but a wonderful thing to invest in. Brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
Snakes, zombies, sharks, heights, speaking in public. The list of fears is endless. But while you're clutching your blanket in the dark, wondering if that sound in the hall was actually a footstep, the real danger is in your hand, when you're behind the wheel. And while you might think a great white shark is scary, what's really terrifying and even deadly is distracted driving. Eyes forward. Don't drive distracted. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Ever miss a farm show or want to hear something again? We keep a week's worth waiting for you on our webpage. Go to WCJW.com, then click on the Agribusiness tab to find the past seven shows. You're welcome. We're going to step aside for a message or two. Then it's Bill Baker and Dairy Rewind.
I'm John Clark for Feedworks USA. It's fall, and if your dairy herd is one of the thousands using Calamine, C-A-L-M-I-N, in your ration, you have our sincere thanks for your trust in your business. If your nutritionist has not included Calamine in your dairy ration, encourage him or her to see if it's a great fit for you. It's natural from the sea and even has an organic certification. Calamine, C-A-L-M-I-N, is a great choice. Ask us how it can work for you. Please find us on the web at FeedworksUSA.com and give us a call at 1-866-737-6273.
This is Dairy Rewind, a look back at what happened this week in the dairy industry. Milky Monday.
Tara Murphy, Market Intelligence Manager at High Ground Dairy in Chicago. Butter was one of the main takeaways.
Yeah, absolutely. Butter imports were really interesting in the month of September. They soared above 10,000 metric tons during the month for the first time ever. Now, of course, this year, China has been importing a lot of butter from New Zealand, and we saw those imports increase as well during the month. And New Zealand's market share is up to 84% of China's total butter import market. We're seeing more butter come into China from Argentina, the United Kingdom, and Denmark. Of course, this is really fascinating as well, as the U.S. butter market is maintaining such a significant discount to these other markets like Europe and New Zealand, but Chinese buyers just remain uninterested in U.S. product.
Tuesday. Today, we're at the Cornell Nutrition Conference, and who should be here but Ian Sawyer of Feedworks Australia.
Cornell is a really wonderful conference, incredible history, a great diversity of science that's been presented at this meeting this year and over the meetings previously. This year's stuff is just an exciting sort of coming together of fatty acid nutrition, amino acid nutrition, but with that background of forage quality and the sort of things that we all know drive productivity in our ruminant sphere.
Pushing you to think outside of your box when you come here, I presume.
Absolutely. If you start thinking about the Australian dairy sector, it's actually very different to the US dairy sector. We have a grazing-based system dominant rather than the confinement systems and the total mixed rations that we see here in the United States. But the science of cows remains the same. It's the same principles of physiology that we want to focus on. It's the same areas that we'll focus on for productivity gains, profitability gains, happiness in reproduction. We're not going to sit around and say that we have different cows with different needs. We just have a different circumstance. So the science that I can see here and the people that I can meet are just as relevant to me down under as they are to the good folks here in the United States.
Wednesday.
Tell us a little bit about size of dairies in Australia.
Average herd size about 330, still dominated by the family-owned farm, but we have plenty of farms above 1,000 cows these days. Typically in corporate hands, or, you know, we do have that large family farm business, that, you know, multi-generational family farm business. Largest single enterprise is probably 10,000 cows on a site. We have a couple of the large investment equity businesses have bought up land and farms, but those are still sort of, you know, grazing-based farms of around about 500 to 1,000 cows.
Thursday.
Dairy in the classroom, there's multiple elements of that, but one is having teacher training. So we actually just brought 30 teachers, and those teachers were able to tour the dairy farm, and they were also able to go to the HP Hood plant to see where that farm sends their milk and then see the products that are developed from it. So we want teachers to have a better understanding of their own food system, because we need to give people more credit. Kids, people know that food starts on the farm, and they know that we buy it at the grocery store. It's all those steps in the middle that they've never experienced before. So we want to illustrate that for them. We want them to give them space to ask questions, and then we want them to take those experiences back and communicate it to their students because they've had an experience with us.
Friday.
Well, welcome to today's Feed Forum, and our topic is going to look at ration optimization. Very interesting discussion presented by Dr. Mark Hannigan from Virginia Polytech and a nutritionist from California by the name of Steve Martin. What do you mean by diet optimization? Well, basically, we're looking at trying to have computers modeling, looking at trying to minimize cost or maximize profit using the best solution. And, of course, this computer has to have several iterations to try to find the best fit. We look at economics out here in the feeding program. The challenge, Bill, is that dairy farmers face a real challenge, and nutritionists. If you look at, there are some 250 feedstuffs here in the United States that could be included in a dairy ration, and 49 different nutrients to be balanced for in the diet itself. So our take-home messages are that, number one, certainly dairy optimization might be a nice tool to use on some farms here in the future. You really need to know what is going to be the best cost for producing milk. Well, that completes the program for today. Thanks. Have a great day.
Thanks, Mike. That's Dr. Mike Hutchins, Professor Emeritus from the University of Illinois, featured every Friday here on our Feed Forum Friday on Dairy Radio Now.
Dairy Rewind.
So there's skim milk, a.k.a. fat-free. There's 1% and 2%. Ever wonder why there isn't a 3%? Well, being a nerdy mom, I do. And you know what? There is one. That's right. It's called whole milk. Whole milk only has 3% milk fat, which, when you think about it, and I do, is not a lot of fat at all. And did you know that no matter what cow's milk you prefer, they all have 8 grams of protein? Of course, it is wonderful. We have so many alternatives, but many nut and plant-based milk substitutes don't meet the nutritional levels naturally contained in dairy. And I'm not big on thickeners, flavorings, or added sugars. Bottom line, cow's milk is still the gold standard when it comes to nutrition. So sure, I'm a nerdy mom, but I love my cows. I mean, kids, I love my kids.
Milk for nerdy moms and just about everyone. Brought to you by Milk for Health on the Niagara Frontier, the guys and gals with the cows.
For 4 generations, more residents have relied on Ed Hume Incorporated for all their building and renovating needs, whether it's construction, site development, home improvement, blacktop, ponds, or other projects. Their team is up for any challenge in front of them. Ed Hume Construction has 2 gravel pits in Wyoming County loaded with screened and crushed gravel, topsoil, scalpings, millings, stone products, and more. There isn't a job too big to handle. Call 786-5880 to see what else Ed Hume can do for you. Or stop in 17 East Buffalo Street in Warsaw.
Let's talk vinyl. Vinyl new construction windows and vinyl replacement windows. You've heard the radio and TV ads offering buy one, get one free. Well, how much do they mark up the original price to be able to offer these deals? A lot.
At First Lumber, we give you a fair, competitive upfront price without all the games. We offer the same warranties as the radio and TV guys, and we proudly carry United and Atrium brand windows, meaning you can buy with confidence when you buy at Burt's. Burt's Lumber and Perry, open 7 days a week, including Sundays, 9 to 1.
Whether you've got 100 acres to mow or just some brush out back, show Brush who's boss. Wood's line of rotary cutters match a variety of tractors and applications so you can start clearing tall grass or tough brush right away with high lift blades and deeper decks for a better overall cut quality. You won't find any other rotary cutters that keep your land in line like Wood's. Stop in to Larry Romance and Son at Arcade, Sheridan, and Woodhall to find the right Wood's rotary cutter for your next job.
We're working our way through the Saturday edition of the CJ Agribusiness Report. In just a moment, we'll check the latest forecast after this brief break.
Western New York weather.
For today's showers, high near 44. Tonight, a chance of showers mainly before 8 p.m., mostly cloudy, low around 35. Saturday, a chance of showers mainly after 5 p.m., partly sunny with a high near 46. Currently in Warsaw, it's 38 at the CJ Country Studios.
It's harvest time in New York. Make sure your equipment is ready to stay in the field with genuine AGCO parts from Java Farm Supply. Their knowledgeable parts specialists are ready to help you find the right agricultural part, from fluids and filters to hoses and fittings to engine and transmission parts and everything in between. Stop at their stores in North Java or Batavia and their online parts store for a wide selection, including Massey Ferguson, Heston, Fendt, Challenger, and more. Java Farm Supply. Your one-stop shop for reliable, genuine AGCO parts.
Cashback is not available on gas in New Jersey and Wisconsin.
$5,000. That's the average amount of money people in the U.S. are now spending on gas in a year. $5,000. That's crazy. If you drive, you have to download Upside, the free app that gives you cash back every time you get gas. That's right. You can earn real cash back with Upside just by buying the gas you're already buying. You can literally start earning cash back today.
I use Upside every time I fill up, and I've already made around $200-$300.
You're putting gas in your car anyway. Why not get real cash back? If you like free money, download Upside.
I'm saving the cash I earn from using Upside to help pay for a vacation later this year.
Download the free Upside app now to earn cash back every time you buy gas. Use promo code MEGA25 to get an extra 25 cents per gallon on your first tank. You can cash out anytime right to your bank, PayPal, or a gift card for Amazon and other brands. Just download the free Upside app and use promo code MEGA25 for a 25 cents per gallon bonus on your first tank. That's code MEGA25 for a 25 cents per gallon bonus.
Time to take a look at how the markets closed out on Friday. Corn futures higher with December up 1.25 at 431.5. March gained a quarter at 444, and May was unchanged at 452.25. November beans were up 8.5 to 1099 and 3/4. January up 7.5 to 1115.25. Chicago December wheat up 9.75, 534. March was up 8 to 548.5. In the hard red or in the Minneapolis spring wheat, December was up 2.5 at 5.53, and March was up 2.25 at 5.73. In the hard red winter, December was up 11.5 to 5.24.5. March was up 7.75 to 5.36.75. Cotton futures higher on the day with December up 42 points at 65.54. March was up 4 at 66.73. May dropped a point at 67.90. A red day in livestock with December live cattle down 142.5 at 229.67.5. February was off 182.5, 227.67.5. April off 197.5 at 226.72.5. November feeders down 295 at 338.87.5. January off 232.5 at 331.90. And March dropped 210 to 327.12.5. December lean hogs up 45, 81.27.5. February up 42.5 to 82.52.5. April gained 12.5 at 86.22.5. November Class 3 milk off 27 cents to 17.39, and December down 13 to 17.22. Crude oil up $41 a barrel, or 41 cents a barrel, at 60.98 on Wall Street. The Dow Jones Industrials up 40 at 47.562. The NASDAQ up 143 to 23.724. The S&P up 17 at 68.40.
How would you like to get high-speed internet for your home for less than $2 a day? That's right, for about $50 a month, you'll get lightning-fast internet. Are you paying less than $50 a month right now for your internet? Then call Whole Home Connect right now for blazing fast internet at $50 a month with no price increases, no hidden fees, no contracts, no upfront costs, no equipment fees. It's a great deal. And guess what? You can try it for 15 days. If you don't like it, you get your money back. But you're going to love it, and you're going to love the price. Internet for your home for $50 a month. That's less than $2 a day. Plus, no contracts, no upfront costs, no equipment fees, and our 15-day guarantee. Call now. 800-923-9018. 800-923-9018. 800-923-9018. That's 800-923-9018.
Thanks for listening to the CJ Country Agribusiness Report. Catch it every Monday through Saturday starting at 5 a.m. And stand by for Western New York's Morning Show next on CJ Country.